All right, this next segment's going to be a lot of fun. I was reading Hardball Times, which is I like the website, and came across an article by Josh Chetwynd, and that's C-H-E-T-W-Y-N-D. And Josh has had an article that was on Hardball Times. It was adapted from his book, The Field Guide to Sports Metaphors, a compendium of competitive world and idioms. That's a very long title. But Josh wrote the book, and it's essentially taking the words of sport and seeing how it fit into everyday use. And I said, wow, this is really pretty good, because I use it all the time, the phrases in my own way of speaking about life. And, you know, you get knocked out of the box if the kids were sick or something like that. And Josh does a great job of talking about baseball idioms and how it's become part of life. So, Josh, nice to have you on the show.
Marty, thanks so much for having me on. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. As I said, this one was kind of fun to read. And maybe you could tell us how this one came about, because what's on Hardball Times is just a short adaptation of a long chapter on baseball idioms. So how did this come about for you?
Well, I grew up playing baseball. I played Division I college baseball at a school called Northwestern University in Big Ten, then played a season of independent minor league baseball. And so baseball was a huge part of my identity. And growing up, when you meet someone, or I guess when people met me and knew that baseball was a huge part of my life, they would always sort of fall into the idioms, which are often, from a baseball standpoint, cliche. It's like, you know, swing for the fences, kid, or, you know, oh, I'm sorry you struck out on that test, and all that sort of stuff. And so for a long time, I was sort of arm's length from those type of cliches, and I started writing books about 7 years ago, but sort of kept on coming back to the cliches, because I thought that the stories behind them were probably more interesting than even the phrases themselves. And I was lucky enough to, as I was doing the research, realize that was very much the case. And baseball is probably one of the greatest wellsprings for these type of sports cliches, because at the start of the 20th century, which was, you know, the American century, baseball was at the center of the universe, along with boxing. And so those two sports really were the sports that really drove a lot of language. And so that was the reason I got into it. And the stories ended up being even better than I anticipated.
Yeah, it's terrific. I like looking at team nicknames and seeing how they came about. You look at the Tigers, they were a military unit, I think, during the Civil War for Michigan. You know, that's they were called the Tigers. And the Boston Braves, how that came around from a symbol of Tammany Hall, the owner of the Braves. So when you look at baseball idioms, you wonder, where did this stuff come from? Because we use it today. And a few of the examples in the article I'd love for you to talk about. One is on the fly, because I use that one a lot. You know, we're going to put this together on the fly. Where did that one come from?
Yeah, I think this one would be one of the more surprising ones, because you hear on the fly, you think it's some sort of bird-related metaphor or analogy. And it actually came from a disagreement in the early days of baseball on how you would be able to register an out. And when baseball first started in the late 1850s, there were actually two ways in which you could get an out. You could catch a ball on the fly, or if a ball bounced once and you picked it up before a second bounce, that was considered an out too. It was called on the bound. And to both sides fought vehemently over which one should be allowed. And ultimately, because the people who were the on-the-fly proponents questioned the manlyhood of the on-the-bound people, on-the-fly won. And one of baseball's first big celebrity fans was Walt Whitman. Walt Whitman was clearly aware of this phraseology, and he saw it and used it as a way to sort of create a metaphor for doing things sort of quickly or doing things with improvisation. Mm-hmm. And the quote that he had was that has mainly been my method. I have caught much on the fly, the things as they come and go on the spur of the moment. And from there, it became a sort of a metaphor for doing things sort of quickly or with improvisation.
I like it. Josh Chetwynd is with us. It's a lot of fun to go through some of these things. Whitman became very famous after the Civil War, talking about, you're right, he was a big baseball fan, and talked about how baseball could heal the country, which was terribly polarized after the war. Whitman was very instrumental in bringing baseball into that context.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty ironic that nowadays people who aren't baseball fans think of it as sort of a slow sport and one that doesn't have a lot of excitement, because at the time, and you compared it to the British version of cricket, it was considered a very exciting game. And an author wrote about it, Ed Folsom, said that Whitman was attracted to baseball metaphors for their colorful, direct, and simple expressiveness.
I love it. All right. The 1-2 punch. You know, it's Mays and Cepeda, the 1-2 punch. It's Mantle and Maris. We use the 1-2 punch all the time now.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this phrase originally came from boxing. It was a boxing analogy. But baseball played a role in bringing it to the forefront of saying any sort of tandem of successful people who can really get the job done. And the story that I found most interesting that sort of pushed it forward, the phrase had been used in baseball as early as the 1910s. But in 1940, a United Press columnist named Harry McLemore, it was spring training, and as I'm sure you know, Marty, in spring training sometimes you're just looking for a way to, you know, keep feeding the beast with stories. And this particular columnist sat down with one of baseball's greatest characters, Mo Berg. For people who don't know who Mo Berg was, he was a catcher, sort of a weak hit, quite good defensive catcher. As one of his teammates once said, he can speak seven languages, but he can't hit in any of them. And then that reflected the fact that he was an amazing polymath. This was a person who had degrees from Columbia and Princeton University and who had gone with a team of all-stars before World War II to Japan, and he was the only non-great player in that group. And the reason we found out later is he was working for the OSS, which was, you know, one of the early military intelligence units, to take reconnaissance pictures of Japan to prepare us for potential war. Well, on this particular day, he sat down with this journalist, and he laid out the argument for 1-2 punch being an excellent analogy for baseball. And he went through sort of using it from a hitting standpoint. I know it's often used as a pitching standpoint today when you talk about the top of your rotation being a 1-2 punch, but he used it as sort of the 1-2 punch being those two great hitters. And the article in which it ran in was one that was widely syndicated and probably played a pretty huge role in making 1-2 punch more than just a boxing term, and then ultimately more than just a baseball term, but a general idiom for talking about a pair of folks that can really make the difference.
Yeah, it could be politics, could be food, it could be anything. The old 1-2 punch of both these things. And it's funny how the origin of all this kind of stuff. Well, tell us where to get the book. Of course, Hardball Times has the adaptation, which I really enjoyed reading. I thought you did a great job because you use other sports as well in the book. And it's just a real easy book to pick up and look at. Where do you get it?
I mean, you can get it at your local bookstores or online, you know, at your favorite online retailer, whether it be Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera. So certainly can find it pretty much anywhere if you like this sort of stuff.
All right. A favorite baseball term before we let you go? What's your favorite maybe that you discovered that maybe you didn't know?
There were a few that were surprising to me, and I sort of knew this in the back of my mind, but I was surprised to sort of hear the story about it, about how luck really played a role in turning this baseball term into a term that's really known for something else, which is jazz. So the music of jazz, of course, was first innovated in New Orleans and also innovated in Chicago. But the term itself actually has roots in the Bay Area, and an old journalist who had written for the San Francisco Bulletin, amongst other San Francisco papers, by the name of E.T. Scoop Gleason, was really the first one to use it. He used it in a baseball context, and he applied it in 1913 to playing with pep, vim, and vigor. So how did it cross over? Well, during spring training that year for the Pacific Coast League for the San Francisco Seals, it was being held in Sonoma County, and Gleason, the team, and a band happened to be staying in the same hotel. And it's pretty likely that at some point Gleason had dropped this term because he used it a lot in baseball in that season to one particular band member who then ended up moving to Chicago and in 1914 started using the term to reflect the type of music that he was using. Within a year in Chicago, it was used to sort of represent blues / jazz, and then went on to New Orleans from there.
Wow. Pep, vim, and vigor. That's the way. Very good. That one I did not know. Jazz. Hey, great job, Josh. Very good. Good luck with the book, and I enjoyed reading it, and it's a lot of fun for a sports fan to pick it up. Thanks for being on.
Much obliged, Murray. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, very good. And this is a good one. Raph, did you know what? You know all those things? You didn't know all those. Josh, you didn't know all those things, did you? Jazz came from baseball?
That was really interesting.
How about
cool.
That? Yeah, he did a great job with this because he uses football and all sorts of different sports. And the terms of sports, you know, I use it all the time. I mean, but the kids would be sick. I'd say, well, you're out of the box. You got knocked out of the box today. With Evan, Aaron, and Bonnie.
How about how far you get with a girl is how many bases.
Yeah, exactly. Well, very good. Very good. I'm thinking of sick children. You're thinking of that. Okay, very good. It's the difference between you and me. All right, very good.